Hey, this is Web3 Talks. The rule of this podcast is simple. We only talk with people who have hands-on Web3 building experience. So if you are a hacker, entrepreneur, or investor, you can get inspired by their stories, lessons, and fuck-ups. My name is Mac, and I'm hosting this pod. If you want to stay in touch, go to twitter.com/Web3Talks, click the link in the pinned tweet, and join our Discord community. Let's go. And we are live. So today's guest is Stefan George from Gnosis. And Gnosis is a very influential product in the space. It, you know, they secure over $40 billion of assets through Gnosis Safe, which is, it's like a just industry standard for most DAOs to secure their assets. But also, if you ever used PoApp, you probably use Gnosis Safe, because under the hood, it's helping us to get all these NFTs to record our attendance at different events. So, you know, Stefan, you're like real OG. You've been here when Ethereum at Consensus and all the projects that we use have been formed, so it's been a long time ago. So could you tell us, you know, what chain of events led you to Gnosis? Because as far as I know, it's been incubated at Consensus back then.
Sure, yeah. Thanks for having me, Mac. It's a great opportunity to be here. So it's dating back quite a while. So we initially started, even before Ethereum, working on applications for Bitcoin in 2013, and then we early on discovered Ethereum. We met Joe Lubin, the founder of Ethereum, or one of the founders of Ethereum and Consensus, very early on, and he convinced us to join Consensus to build Gnosis. So we already had the idea of building decentralized prediction markets, and he convinced us to join Consensus, and we were very early there as well, maybe employee number 3 and 4. Then we started building Gnosis as part of Consensus, because we saw the opportunity to build like really decentralized prediction markets. And at that time, I think prediction markets were one of the most anticipated applications for Ethereum. Fast forward, things are quite different today, and Gnosis has also developed in many different ways. I think today, as you mentioned, like if you ask people what does Gnosis do, then many will probably say Gnosis Safe, even though that's actually not what we do anymore. The Safe became a spin-off from Gnosis, and now it's just Safe. And Gnosis is now focusing on our own network, Gnosis Chain, which actually PoApps are being issued. So yes, so if you're an owner of a PoApp, then this PoApp has been issued on Gnosis Chain.
So, you know, like, Stefan, how was building things on Ethereum back then? Because it was like 2014, as far as I remember. So it's been like super early, early days.
Yeah, fun times. Because as you said, like, we basically started developing on Ethereum before Ethereum was even live itself, or like before the Ethereum network was actually live. So we basically developed a lot on the test environments of Ethereum, the test nets, the first test nets, all the iterations of it. And at that time, everything was breaking every other day. So on the one hand, it was quite of kind of annoying to kind of always adapt to everything that's changing constantly. Like Ethereum itself was a moving target. On the other hand, it also made rapid progress. So like the language solidity changed a lot. Also how the blockchain behaved changed a lot in a very short time. The EVM developed almost on a weekly basis. So kind of what we do now in a couple of years time in terms of implementing changes in hard forks is kind of happened in a very tiny amount of time. So like kind of like a hard fork every other day, basically. So it was also exciting, but it was also challenging because obviously there was no developer tooling. There was hardly anything available to make your life easier. And so we also started contributing to this kind of experience, and but it was good times. So we were lucky to also work together with the Ethereum Foundation in the same office, at the time, the foundation had only one real office, which was in Berlin. And we were also, or like I was also based in Berlin at the time. And so we worked hand in hand with those developers, which also created a nice feedback loop. So we could always give feedback directly on how the language develops and take advantage of this as well, of course.
So yeah, I mean that you were like one of the first applications on Ethereum, but you also like made an iteration or even a pivot because, you know, you were about to start with the prediction market, but your product evolved. So could you tell us like why it happened?
Sure, yeah. So as I said, like kind of prediction markets, I think was one of the most anticipated applications for Ethereum at the time. So we're also not the only ones trying to do this. There was actually another project called Augur, which tried to also build decentralized prediction markets, and they actually did the first ICO ever on Ethereum, and they were able to raise a lot of capital. So at the time, they raised over 5% of the Ether supply in the ICO.
Oh God!
And also, in addition to that, an equal amount of Bitcoin or even more. And so they were very well funded, and we saw, even though Augur was kind of ahead of the game at the time, we saw there's room for competition, and we're going to build the main competitor to Augur, which was Gnosis. And yeah, then we also did an ICO in 2017, and yeah, we already had iterated a couple of times on the idea of prediction markets, but the reality was that people did not care too much about prediction markets. And even though there were different versions of prediction markets being released by many different teams, no one really ever used them to an extent that was really like meaningful,
mm-hmm.
Or also showing that there was a real business behind this. Obviously, there were already like other like real world, let's say, prediction markets, like, mm-hmm. or like in the fiat world, there were a couple of sports betting websites that allowed peer-to-peer sports betting, which is kind of equivalent to prediction markets. But on blockchain, I think there are multiple reasons why this never took off. Like, for example, users are used to speculate on many assets in blockchain, so they don't need another way to speculate necessarily, where the upside is limited as in prediction markets. Also, prediction markets usually work well in niche markets where you have insider information that can be traded, but then you also have to have those insiders on your platform, and that was also a challenge. So the only insider markets that actually worked well were Ethereum related. So for example, we had one market on the release date of Ethereum 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually an interesting market because obviously a lot of Ethereum core developers are are able to participate on those markets. And so this market created quite some controversy. But yeah, beyond those, it was nothing that was really like driving a lot of adoption or volumes. And so it was always more like a niche. And at the same time, when we did the ICO, it was clear that we were still at the very beginning of building the ecosystem. So a lot of components were missing. So for example, as part of the ICO, Gnosis ICO, we also built a multi-signature wallet, which allowed to store the proceeds of the ICO itself. And it turned out that this was actually much more useful than the prediction market at the time, because many ICOs followed, they all use the same infrastructure. And so that's kind of was the birth of the multisig becoming very popular and trusted. And then we did an iteration of this, which was a Gnosis Safe, which was a bit more generic, could fit more use cases, was much more gas efficient, so was more future proof to what Ethereum is today. And yeah, that was kind of the beginning of the story of the multisig, and turning this into like a really big success story,
mm-hmm.
By yeah, developing trust over time. And mm-hmm. We also did other things. We also worked a lot on exchange infrastructure, and the product that resulted out of this research was CowSwap, which is also one of the most used decentralized exchanges, mm-hmm. offers you to get the best prices basically and being protected from MEV.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, like building multisig is a very hard thing in a sense that on one hand it needs to be absolutely safe, because of course it's like the core feature of it. But on the other hand, you need to have good UX because people who use multisigs are often a different level of technical capabilities, I might say. So how have you managed to do it? Because like I used Safe and it's super clean, very intuitive, even though under the hood there's a lot of things going on.
Yeah, good question. So also I have to say this was not something that happened immediately. So if you look at like the first versions of the Gnosis Safe and also the Gnosis Multisig, then I would not necessarily say that it had great user experience. And that resulted also from the fact that we required like security was always first. Like you first have to build something that's secure. And then even you can start improving on security. And so the first versions of the multisig UI were actually very close to the contract itself. So it kind of just showed what was happening in the contract. And that was really bare bone. And if you were not a developer, I think you could hardly understand what was going on. And then we started adding convenience features to make it more readable of like what does the transaction data actually entails and who has to sign and so on. And the same happened with the Safe as well. At the beginning, it was very bare bone. And then over time, we added more and more convenience features. And we also built a mobile app for it to make it easy for you to sign and understand what's going on. And so this just user experience just takes a lot of time. So security in terms of building a secure smart contract, it's one thing, but then building a great user experience is actually also just a lot of great engineering, got a lot of great user research. So we had quite a few user researchers also understanding of how people are using it and then improving on. So it's just a lot of work, basically. So there's no magic behind it. It's just like trying to build a great product. And it always takes time. I think for us, it was always very important that security is never compromised. So also when improving user experience, should never be at the expense of security, quite the opposite. We want users to really understand what they're signing. We put a lot of effort into that. But still, yeah, trying to make it as easy as possible for people to sign off. It is still a challenge today. I would say even today, there's still a lot of improvements that can be done, especially in the context of understanding what you're actually signing. But we made a lot of progress with integration. So it's also not everything that you see in the UI is built by us, but there are many things where we leverage partners that also help us to build a better product, like Tenderly, for example, to simulate what transactions are doing and make you aware of what the outcome is if you actually sign this.
And how have you acquired first users back then? Was it like, okay, we build, this multisig for us to secure our ICO assets, and other people just started asking you about it, or was it, somehow differently?
No, actually, also a good lesson learned here. Like, we built something for ourselves, and in crypto, if you build something for yourself, then quite likely you're also serving the need of other people, actually. And this is what happened here. So, we built this for ourselves, and then even without even asking us, and even without being aware that there's a security audit or not, people started using it. So, I just remember that even before our own ICO, Golem, like the Golem project that raised, I think 400,000 Ether.
Oh my
They
God.
started using this multisig, and I remember like a friend called me and said like, "Oh, look at this! Like there was just an ICO, and they used this contract." And I was a bit shocked, but they did it, and they didn't even contact us beforehand. They were just assuming, I guess, that the contract is safe. And in hindsight, they told me they also did an audit on it. But yeah, this was fun times, and we just were, I guess, kind of lucky enough to be a first mover in building the core piece, but also building it in a way that others really trusted it and that there was no need to build something else.
And right now Safe moved to like Safe DAO, as far as I know. So I'm wondering, like, why have you spun off this project outside of Gnosis and made it, more decentralized? What was the goal here, and how it looked like?
Yeah, good question. So it was actually like a long ongoing discussion also with the Gnosis, if this is something like we should do or not. ultimately, there were a couple of factors that were playing into this. So one requirement, of course, for a spin-off is that you have people that are capable of leading the project. That's kind of necessary, obviously. And I think we were lucky enough to have on our teams, so the Safe, but also Cowstop, have really like great people that were great leaders that had their own vision for how the product should move forward. And who were also proving themselves already within Gnosis when they were still part of Gnosis that they're capable of executing this. And I think then the second factor that played into this was also that we saw the opportunity to give those teams a lot more freedom and develop much faster by actually being independent, and also the opportunity to give them more, let's say, resources in order to make progress. So they were both able to do a fundraise independent of Gnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now they're really well off in terms of having enough resources to grow really fast. And I think the speed of development has increased a lot. So it's a lot also about giving people agency and responsibility. And that we did anyways, even before we did the spin-offs, we gave people a lot of responsibilities and freedom in order to develop the things as they think it would make sense. And that also allowed them to grow into these responsibilities and, yeah, make this spin-off mm-hmm. successful.
Okay, and how does it look like, how did it look like on a, you know, technical process level? So, because, you know, you were a company that had a product. So, you know, how have you actually like moved this asset to another team, and how have you decided like how to form it and, you know, how to create this DAO?
Very good question. So, I mean, on a technical level, that was actually, I mean, it took time, but at least in terms of IP, there was not much to be transferred because everything we do is open source. So on that level, there's not a lot to be transferred. It's of course about the teams being able to go on of their own. For this, we created a few new companies. The team also itself understood like, okay, what is the best setup for us to do the fundraise and so on. And it was a little bit similar maybe to how also Gnosis spun up from Consensus. So we had a lot of independence already in Consensus to prepare for the spin-off, probably even more than our team said. And then it was really a big open question was, of course, like, how is Gnosis DAO being compensated for this, especially given that the Safe was seen as the main product for Gnosis? There had to be a clear answer to this. There was a lot of ongoing discussions also, like, what is the percentage owned by Gnosis DAO? That took a while, but ultimately I think everyone was happy with the result. and then we were able to kind of, yeah, delegate those assets to Safe DAO, and mm-hmm. also the team was anyways already working kind of with Gnosis as one unit. So it was mm-hmm. not too difficult to decide, okay, who's going to join Safe now and who will remain at Gnosis. So I would say the whole process took about 1 year maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this process was also included also doing the fundraise, which in itself, of course, took also quite some time. It was ultimately, I would say, a pretty smooth transition so mm-hmm. far, at least. Yeah.
Hey, if you like this episode, here's a short break, because you can actually meet Stefan in person. And you can meet him on Epic Web Conference organized by our partner. And this conference is special because, just like podcasts, it's focused exclusively on building and growing Web3 products. So they have a very strong lineup. There are people from MetaMask, Ledger, Decentraland, PoApp, MakerDAO, Zerion, and many, many more. Stefan, of course, will be there as well. So if you would like to learn more, go to epicweb3.com, and all our subscribers get 15% off. So if you decide to buy a ticket, during checkout, just type in Web3 Talks code and you will get 15% off. So Thanks a lot, and we are returning to the episode. Okay, and you know, let's get to Gnosis chain. Like, why have you built your own chain? Because this is a huge project to do, and there are many chains right now competing. You've been here quite early, and for sure, like, you are, I guess, one of the oldest Ethereum side chains, as far as I know. But like, why have you decided to build it in the first place?
Good question. So, as you said, like, we actually did not build it ourselves. We actually merged with an existing sidechain, XDAI. And well, XDAI has some interesting applications, like, for example, PoAP is one of the most used applications on Gnosis chain. And as you said, like, it's pretty difficult to bootstrap an ecosystem and create like a successful network. And that's why we decided to, instead of building our own, we continue operating an existing one and try to give it a new perspective. And that's what we did with XDAI. So us being like an application developer on top of Ethereum, we were very well positioned also to bring more applications to that time XDAI, now Gnosis chain. And when we did this, we also decided to change the technical roadmap of the network. So we kind of left the path of being a simple proof of authority network, what PoAP used to be, and change it to, yeah, follow the Ethereum roadmap. So we launched our open beacon chain and yeah, follow the Ethereum stack, which also makes us like 100% compatible to Ethereum and future Ethereum upgrades. We actually call now Gnosis chain more like a sister chain to Ethereum, which kind of requires us to have the same stack. And we kind of like name this like the Ethereum verse. So a bit similar to the Cosmos verse, where you have multiple layer one chains, which are connected via IBC. We create the Ethereum verse, where you have multiple kind of instances of Ethereum running in parallel, which are connected via light client based bridges. So very similar to how IBC works, we created a protocol like a ZK bridge between the two networks, which allows to verify the beacon chain consensus from one chain on the other, and obviously vice versa. And that creates a very like secure environment for everyone who wants to operate and use information from the other network. And yeah, today Gnosis chain is the second most decentralized network, I would say, or maybe third after Bitcoin and Ethereum. We have about 120,000 validators securing the network, run by, I think, 1,700 nodes. So run by individuals and companies. And that makes it a super resilient network. We think that there's demand for decentralized block space. Obviously, Ethereum is one of the few networks which really runs at capacity. Constantly, and we just think there's the we have to offer more of what is really needed, which is decentralized block space. Other networks are really trying to kind of compete more on the scalability side, but today we have an abundant amount of cheap block space and fast block space, but there's very few decentralized block space, and that's what we double down on. And we see that there's quite a few applications, especially, let's say, more financial applications that can benefit from having like credible neutral execution environment. That's what we can do. Like, that's what we can offer. Mm-hmm. Like a network that is clearly not biased towards one jurisdiction, a network that is really credible neutral, where you as a developer, you can deploy your application and it will be there also in the future, and you don't have to trust like a few entities to execute it. And I would like to compare it a bit to the safe. So for the safe, we developed safe, but it took quite some time for people to gain trust and move their assets over to this net, to this contract. And today, as you said, like, it has billions and billions of dollars being secured by safe contracts. So I kind of want to get to the same with Gnosis chain. So today, TVL of Gnosis chain is rather low, but we have been creating a very secure and very reliable infrastructure that should allow users to store very significant value on this network. So I kind of want you and everyone else to store your life savings on this network, and also obviously bring utility that incentivize you to do so. So we're working with a lot of like real world asset providers, which are now natively issuing those assets on Gnosis Chain, which allow you to have a very attractive financial products to earn yield and and at the same time have a secure environment for you to keep those assets.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Stefan, so like let's take a step back like a little bit, because you said that you have over 120,000 validators, which is a lot, to say the least. So, you know, decentralization is one of the hardest things to build because, you know, you need to have a lot of people involved around the world. So like, how have you done it? How you involved so many people and entities to take part in the Gnosis ecosystem?
So yeah, you can think of like the requirements for you to run a Gnosis Chain validator are very low, especially if you compare it to other networks. You have to have either like very expensive hardware, like on Solana, for example, or you have to invest a lot of money into the token to participate in staking, like Ethereum. Like in Ethereum, you need at least 32 Ether. That's now, again, almost $60,000. So not everyone can do this, obviously. And for Gnosis Chain, we drop those requirements to one GNO, which is about $120. And you can run it on any commodity hardware. And we even incentivize people to buy this hardware. So what we did is we had like campaigns running where you could buy a DappNode device. So a DappNode is a simple computer where it's very easy for you to run clients like a Gnosis Chain client. And on top of this, we gave users GNO tokens, which then they could use to participate in staking on the network. And this is a campaign that went very well. So lots of people were buying the hardware and a lot of people were starting running the hardware and validating the network. And I think that was a very good grassroots initiative that a lot of users to be onboarded. And I think also, we are not done with this campaign. So we actually would like to even increase this effort. And we are working on a campaign that should onboard users in every country. So our goal is one metric that we have is one validator in each country. And that is something that is, would be great to see. Like if you see this map, I'm not sure if you've seen this map for Ethereum, but if you look at Ethereum, for example, it's very like centered around Europe and US. That's where pretty much all the validators are running. And we would like to create more diversity and have validators really everywhere. So we don't create networks which are biased towards one geographical location and then potentially being prone to regulation in those countries.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, because of this global approach, do you see a different geographical mix when it comes to people that use or build on top of Gnosis Chain? Do you have more people from, you know, Asia, South America, Africa, or Australia?
I would say that's too early. Like the campaign, I mean, has been, of course, going on for a while. And we see some developers, of course, coming from those locations. But I would not say that this has really changed a lot. I think that also comes with the fact that most developers are also based in Europe and US. So it kind of comes together. But I think at least we have kind of a foot in the door in many other countries, which are not yet as familiar with Web3 as we are in Europe or United States. So for me, it's just a matter of time. And I think quite likely if you're already running a node for such a network, then it's also already more likely that if you develop something, you are developing on this network.
Okay, and you know, you mentioned these new use cases on Gnosis Chain, the things that people can actually do there. So could you expand on that, like give some examples that, you know, might be like tangible and we can really imagine like what we can do and maybe even after listening to that, go on and test how it works.
Yes, absolutely. So one field that we would like to double down on for Gnosis Chain are real world assets, or generally the theme of like, how do we connect to the real world, right? Like if you look at blockchain today, like what is actually being used, then there are really only two kind of field of applications that drive pretty much all the demand for transactions. This is DeFi, NFTs, DeFi NFTs trading, I would say generally speculation. So like NFT marketplaces, decentralized exchanges for ERC20 tokens. This is kind of the number one application. And then we have games, like blockchain native games, which are run on the cheaper networks like Polygon, Gnosis Chain, Binance Smart Chain, right? This is kind of really at this point what is driving most users right now today. And then there's nothing else. And so we believe that one big driver for additional adoption, which obviously has to happen, will be to connect much more closely to real world and allow users to kind of use blockchain more in their daily lives. And for this, we are working together with a few projects which will allow to do this. So one project is called Oli, which is a payment card and like a Visa card. But at the same time, this card is also a hardware wallet. So you can actually, when you tap somewhere to pay, you're actually signing a transaction on Gnosis Chain. Mm-hmm. And then this transaction is injected into the Visa transaction itself. It is sent via the Visa protocol. The processor receives this Visa transaction, including also the crypto transaction. The processor in this case is us. So we can verify that the user has actually signed this. And then we can confirm to Visa that we received the money. They can settle this transaction in fiat to the merchant, and we can settle it on chain. So you can have a direct link between like you paying in a coffee shop and you spending your DAI or euro or whatever you have on Gnosis Chain in this one single transaction. And that allows to create also ultimately like a complete new payment network. So something where you can create your own payment scheme. You can upgrade potentially the point of sale systems to accept crypto directly and then have like a pure peer-to-peer payment experience. And that should really change the game of how merchants and customers are interacting. And obviously payments is something that you do on your daily basis, actually a couple of times. So it creates already a very different perspective of how you deal with crypto, which is very tangible. Obviously you also have the benefit of having money in a non-custodial account where you have now access to all the beautiful applications that we built around our blockchain application. And so I could think, for example, if you next time go to a coffee shop and the coffee shop actually is aware of the system, they could start issuing like co-ops for every purchase you do and then use it as sort of a loyalty system, for example. But there are many other ways, of course, how I think the merchant can then start communicating with the client or with the customer. And and around this experience, we also try to build everything else that the user might need, right? Like, for example, we work with a fiat on off-ramp called Monerium. And what makes them special is that they tightly integrate into the SEPA system. So SEPA is what we use in Europe to do every transfer, right? It's like we all have done it many times. And the cool thing is now the way Monerium works is that they generate an IBAN for you. You can send euros to this IBAN and then they immediately issue euro tokens on chain. And that can go within 1 minute. So you can onboard from fiat euro to crypto euro in 1 minute and at zero slippage, at zero cost. So by definition, that's the cheapest way and the best user experience you can have to go in euro. And also vice versa, going out of euro, because now you can actually trigger a SEPA transfer with an on-chain transaction. And I can, I don't know, in a safe transaction, I can combine 100 SEPA transfers to random people or whatever. And so that kind of implies for you also that you can have your bank account on-chain. So you can have all your euros in non-custodial wallet, which you can spend also in the regular fiat world via regular bank transfers and via the payment card anywhere where you want to pay. That is already quite a lot of what your actual bank does. And now on top of this, we also work with a company called Backed Finance. And what they offer is they offer different like one-to-one backed financial products such as stocks, ETFs, and also fixed income products such as US Treasuries. And they are now also being offered on Gnosis Chain. So You can convert your euros to on-chain euros at no cost, and then you can start buying those assets at very little slippage, very little cost, and earn yield. With very, very low risk for yourself. And that is something that is quite amazing. And yeah, my personal goal is to at least get rid of some of my bank accounts I have to really move on chain. And I think at that point, it will become really kind of seamless, the interaction between like real finance and complete on-chain interaction. And I will be able to take advantage of everything else that we build around this.
These are really amazing things. I mean, these are things that I have never heard of yet before. And what I really love about these solutions is these are really like the best of the two worlds. So on one hand, there's this non-custodial wallet from DeFi, which gives you freedom and real security. But on the other hand, there's this like convenience from banking and the TradFi world when it comes to investing and, you know, paying every day. So I must say I'm very impressed. I'm really surprised that I've never heard about these projects because they are really amazing. Could you tell us like if they are under development or are they already, you know, ready to use? So
you can be one of the first users because they actually really it's no surprise you have never really heard of it because it's just basically deployed as we speak. But for example, what you can test today is integration to SEPA network. So you can go to monerium.com, you can create an account, you get an IBAN, you can send euros from your Revolut account, for example. Most banks support instant SEPA these days. So within 1 minute, you will get these euro tokens on chain. You can do it vice versa, offboard from euro on chain to euro like in your bank account. We also provide significant liquidity for the euro token on Gnosis chain. So it's really easy for you to convert also, let's say, you want to sell a token and you want to offboard to your bank account. Now, the cheapest and fastest way to go actually over Gnosis chain, because again, like you bypass the exchanges like Kraken or Binance, and you actually save a significant amount of fees on this because on those exchanges, you always have to trade in order to get euros. So you save a lot of money. It's much, much faster for you. And that's something you can already do today. So already today, if you want to offboard euro, go over Gnosis chain. It's the best option you have. And then secondly, we started providing also liquidity, or like we will start providing liquidity next week for the assets I mentioned. So like there's S&P 500, one-to-one back tokens. The custodian for this is actually in Switzerland. So that's actually a very trustworthy setup here, not like USDC or USDT. This is like a trustworthy setup. Then it will be like just another trade on CowSwap or Balancer for you to get exposure to those assets. The payment card. So we are, let me try if I have it here in my wallet. I hope I have. Must be here somewhere. Oh. Yeah, I actually do. Because we already have this card here.
Oh, okay.
You see, it looks like a Visa card, right?
Yeah, like a normal card.
And it is a Visa card, but it's also a hardware wallet. So this card here is as powerful as a Ledger hardware wallet, but at a fraction of the cost. Creating this card, creating this chip, this hardware wallet costs less than a dollar. And so it can either be mass produced and it's really, it's not a big deal to create those cards. And and they actually allow you to have non-custodial payments, and it's actually pretty cool. So for me, obviously, I can already do it. I can go and pay in the coffee shop, tap and pay, and I see the transaction, corresponding transaction on my phone. And that's just already kind of an amazing experience that I can see that I actually spend the DAI or euro tokens that I have in my wallet. And of course, it allows a lot more possibilities. So I think also we will see a big ecosystem being built around this experience, because now you have to build new software for merchants to maintain and build the customer experience. Obviously, on the customer side, also a lot to be done.
Yeah, and for me, this pop-up use case is really amazing for these cards, like having it integrated inside the card so you don't have to think about it at all. Seems like a very, very good idea. So, yeah, so, there's like, I'm just looking here because I have questions here. So, I'm wondering, like, when you're running a project such as Gnosis Chain, what are the most important factors and metrics that you follow? What's your North Star when you wake up every day?
Very good question as well. So I think that for networks, there are kind of a few metrics that are always important. Like for example, you have to make sure that network basically runs and that like core components are actually functional. This is kind of a base requirement, but if you look at many other networks, that's actually not easy to actually guarantee.
Yeah.
Like I'm talking about bridges, I'm talking about validator sets, I'm talking about core infrastructure like RPCs and block explorers. So there's quite a bunch of stuff that you have to get sorted before you can even consider your network being a functional network. So that fortunately we were able to cover quite well in the last couple of months. So now I would consider Gnosis Chain being one of the most stable networks. It has one of the most best infrastructure providers. And yeah, I can tell like basically the developers that work on Gnosis Chain, they're quite happy with how reliable the infrastructure is at this point. Then of course there's the other component, which is creating demand for the network, like what is the utilization of the network, how many transactions are being done, how much value is stored on the network, and so on. And I think there we are still at the beginning of the journey that I just explained to you, like this, I would say the idea of really making Gnosis Chain like a decentralized bank, like where you can really have everyone being operational on this network, being onboarded to the tool that we have. And I actually think this would be a great way for us also to onboard a lot of new users that previously maybe not have had access to bank accounts. So obviously we are kind of starting right now with Europe. But there are many advantages in starting in Europe, but the goal is of course to go to many other countries and make it really easily accessible to anyone. And then hopefully actually finally help with this perspective of having more people included in our space. And I think that will be a very exciting journey for us.
And from what I've heard is that you work on ZK capabilities for your network. So could you expand on that? Like, do you plan to add some privacy layer or anything like that soon?
Right, yeah, so a couple of components where we use ZK. Actually, one is the bridge itself. So, as I mentioned, we're thinking about this Ethereum verse, and we have different instantiations of the Ethereum clients. One is Gnosis Chain, and we connect it to Ethereum via a new bridge, a light client-based bridge. And for this, we work together with the team of Succinct Labs to build a ZK-based light client. And that is actually a requirement to make it even feasible because there's a lot of computation necessary that has to be outsourced in a ZK circuit. Otherwise, it would not be feasible to even compute this on chain. So, yeah, we are very happy to actually have built this and very soon it will also be operational. And in that sense, like ZK just allows us to even have such a solution at all. And then we also have privacy functionality on Gnosis Chain. So we think that privacy is actually should be like a human right, actually. Like you should be able to transact privately and should not be forced to make everything public as it is today. Unfortunately, it was perceived a bit negatively in the recent past because number one demand for privacy came from people that were hacking other people, and that's not great. But for me, it's pretty obvious that like this is not the number one use case. The reason why it's right now the number one use case is because we don't have enough people right now on the network. Just going back to the payment use case, for example, if we actually have a peer-to-peer payment network, which is ultimately the goal of this payment initiative, right, where you can directly pay the merchant and you don't have to go over another scheme, then privacy becomes a big issue, because then you can always trace, like, this person did a purchase with this merchant about this amount, and that's something you really don't want to make public to anyone. At the same time, actually, for you participating in Visa network, you have to be KYC'd. And I think that's a great use case where all the users on this network have to be KYC'd. At the same time, it's obvious that you need privacy, because you don't want to make it traceable, like who is basically transacting with whom. And so adding ZK to this is a no-brainer. We have to do it. At the beginning, we won't, because it's technically quite challenging actually to scale it to this amount of transactions. But it's very clear it has to be the case in the future. And so we are talking to the teams that are working on the ZK technology for this. And as soon as we see it viable, as soon as we see the demand, because there are more peer-to-peer transactions, we will actually integrate this. And even today, there's privacy preserving layers on top of Gnosis Chain. I will not promote them right now, but they exist. And on top of this, we also care a lot about privacy for MEV protection. So obviously, MEV protection is something very important to us. CalSwap was kind of a result of this research. And this also strongly connect to the protection of the mempool, to make like information in the mempool private. Obviously, right now we have a public mempool, and we would like to give privacy to the mempool without kind of compromising on decentralization, ideally. And for this, we work with something called Shutter Network, to create a shutterized beacon chain where the transactions being included are actually encrypted until the time when the validator is committed to include them. Only then they become visible. And we think that will add a lot of protection to users, obviously, because there's no fear of being front run if everything you do is encrypted. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would like to ask you, because like you've been working on Gnosis for almost 10 years, I guess.
Yeah, more than 2 years, but yeah, a long time.
Yeah, so I'm wondering what have been the most surprising thing when you were building that, because for sure you started with some initial set of hypotheses, some kind of idea what you want to build, kind of idea what people need. You already mentioned the prediction market, for example, and where the crypto is actually heading, because in 2013 I guess it was totally different direction. So I'm wondering, like, how has it changed? What have you learned that was very surprising to you and changed your mind?
So I think at the beginning when we raised capital, my expectation was that either we're going to make it in a couple of years' time or we go bust. So the surprising part was that what we raised money for, prediction markets, actually never made it. We are still here, obviously. So I think that was a very different expectation, because startups in crypto work quite differently, I would say, compared to like traditional startups. I think we were also, I guess not lucky, but we were fortunate enough to pivot always kind of do many things in parallel, out of which some really succeeded. Others clearly did not succeed, but we had some parts that were really clearly successful that allowed us to keep going and develop more crazy things that we think are useful, potentially useful. And I think my perspective has changed a little bit, because I'm definitely much more driven by now to just get the technology to a stage where we can really prove something. So I feel like, even though working on this for 8 years, so far we have built technology for a very tiny percentage of humanity. So if you look at how many users are there actually in our ecosystem in terms of using decentralized applications, I would argue there's probably not more than maybe 20 million, maybe 25 million users that have actually used decentralized technology. So it's a drop in the bucket. It's like 0.25% of the world population has been using crypto, and that seems like not a lot to me. So that's something I'm actually keen on changing, and hopefully we can at least double it. That would already be a big success. And yeah, that's I think something that changed for me. So I think initially it was maybe more driven also by pure like business instinct and seeing opportunity. Now it's more like, okay, we were able to bootstrap a few interesting things, but we still haven't really changed a lot in terms of having a societal impact, for example.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure your new products might at least add some to this goal. So, Stefan, if you were today is 20th of March 2023. So let's say today you stop building Gnosis for whatever reason and you have to build something else. What would you build?
Well, then I would build a wave pool in Portugal. That's something I would be keen on doing right now.
It would be a very important project as well.
No, just kidding. But I think there are lots of problems still that have to be solved. I would probably try to just spend time on understanding other problems and how potentially you can help solving them. So at this point, I would not say this is one problem which I find like is outstanding where I could really help a lot, but also haven't spent too much time in thinking about other problems. But obviously there are many problems to be solved. And I think technology can still help a lot in solving some of those challenges. So I think in Europe we are very lucky to be in a place where we have, besides some wars going on, it's a pretty stable environment and a pretty, let's say, safe environment. But that's obviously not the case in most parts of the world. And I still believe that technology can change this. Of course, blockchain is more on the, let's say, financial inclusion part at some point, hopefully. But there are also other interesting aspects like, I don't know, more secure communication. I think there are lots of autocratic regimes which try to really, where I think no one can really feel safe in how they communicate. And I think there's still a lot to be done to offer users or like citizens better way, better means of communication.
Yeah, it's definitely noble goal to do that because I also live in Europe. I live in Poland, which is very close to Ukraine, and it's very easy to take for granted some things. And when shit hits the fan, then you need the technology like crypto, for example. When people were leaving Ukraine and they could just have their money on hardware wallet, or on the other way around, we could send money to Ukraine to support them and do it from all over the world, and it was really, really nice. So, Stefan, you said you mentioned challenges, so I'm wondering, if you had a magic wand and could fix one thing about Web3, what would you fix?
That's a hard one, but I kind of what I'm always, I feel like we would be kind of further ahead with less resources because I feel like we like the whole space is very driven by speculation, which drives always a lot of resources in and then eventually out again in bear markets. But I think this kind of leads to also issues where like resources are definitely not effectively allocated, especially in crypto. You see so many projects doing the same thing and so many networks trying to solve the same. And that also leads to this weird situation where it's really hard to collaborate because, or like let's say, consolidate the market, which I think would be actually needed in order to drive progress faster. But right now it seems unlikely because everyone sits on still very high valuations, and which makes it just kind of hard to cooperate sometimes. And also think money is still invested into the wrong thing. So if you look at how VCs are investing, they're still investing mostly in infrastructure projects, like another layer two, or like another, I don't know, middle layer protocol. And I think what we would need a lot more is actually applications that can drive more adoption, because that's what really is clearly lacking to me. But I see that most VCs are too afraid or not knowledgeable enough to take those risks of betting on single applications. And everyone rather invests to the like 100th like layer two technology, which will also have no users. But yeah, that's just how it is.
Yeah, I totally agree with this apps point. Like for me, you know, it's very strange that, you know, there are so many entrepreneurs in the space already, so many developers, but still like most of them lean into this infrastructure side. And that's also because, as you said, like VCs are more happy to fund the infrastructure because they think, okay, like if you invest in layer one or layer two and it grows, then you know, get value and money from all transactions that are going on there. Or if you invest in another RPC provider, then you get money. It's like, you know, picks and shovels and so on. But I'm here with you because apps are definitely necessary right now. And I think, yeah.
Yeah, just one comment to this. Also, I think what people misunderstand is like, it's actually much easier to change technology than make users move. And I think we'd all agree with that. Like for example, on Gnosis Chain, we can change even the most fundamental part of the network, which is the consensus, right? Also on Ethereum, obviously the same. Go from proof of work to completely different consensus proof of stake without changing the user behavior. And it would be extremely difficult actually to make users, for example, just upgrade their wallets. Everyone has to upgrade their wallets or contracts, right? To just say, okay, we have in parallel now the proof of stake Ethereum. That doesn't work. Everyone agrees this doesn't work. At the same time, whereas the user, of course, the users owned by wallets or the users owned by applications. And that's why my view actually value capture will be more on this side ultimately than on the infrastructure layers below that, because they are ultimately, most of them can be commoditized, and most of them don't really have strong network effects. And so, yeah, I'm not too bullish, to be honest, on purely investing into infrastructure.
Yeah, me neither. So, Stefan, like, what are your favorite Web3 projects? Outside, of course, of CowSwap, Gnosis Chain, and Safe.
For me, it's really kind of every project that really tries to embrace new user groups, bringing them to our technology. So to give one example is VitaDAO. So VitaDAO is a DAO that is focused on longevity research and investments. And they were very successful in fostering a community of domain experts in longevity around their DAO. And they're able to sponsor grants to like new interesting initiatives in this field. They're able to invest, and they're even able to capture the value of those investments into a new product they created called IP NFTs, which is then a real world asset on our networks. And this, I think, it's a great innovation and a great way to kind of embrace a completely new community. And I think also generally science can benefit a lot from the, let's say, open source movement that generally, I think, helped to obviously foster the blockchain ecosystem as well. And those kinds of projects I find super exciting. So for me, really anything that kind of tries to expand the users that we have today on those networks. I think generally DAOs can help a lot here as well. VitaDAO is a good example. but I would also expect that there are more initiatives being driven by DAOs, especially because like capital formation, like fundraising is something where obviously blockchain shines. I think everyone would agree that that's a clear product market fit for blockchain. And I think there will be a lot more DAOs using blockchain for that purpose that might also have some political motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also a big fan of this DeSci movement. I also heard about one project where people who have very rare diseases that, you know, are too, like, they, it doesn't make economic sense for pharmaceutical companies to develop drugs to cure them because they have too small total addressable market. Like, they can, you know, connect and together fundraise development of some drugs or even just hire researchers to look at whatever has been developed so far and maybe try to, you know, cure their own problems. So this is something really, really, really beautiful, you know, application of DAOs here. So Stefan, like, last two questions here. First one is where people should go to learn more about Gnosis. What's the best place? Is it Twitter, Discord, the website, or any other place on the internet?
Yeah, the best is just going to gnosis.io, and there you have links to our forum, to our documentation, to the Discord, and so on. Also, would like to promote the Safe, like safe.global is where you learn everything about the Safe. The topic of account abstraction is actually very important to both Safe and Gnosis Chain. So we really want to promote account abstraction. On the Safe website, you also have all the links that like tell you how to integrate it. There's actually still a hackathon going on where you can try to utilize the new SDK that we developed with the Gnosis Safe that allows you to take advantage of account abstraction. So that is something you should definitely also take a look at.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. One last thing, like, you know, we had this conversation about building. You are definitely very accomplished builder in the space. So I'm wondering, you know, do you know any other people like you that might be a good fit for the conversation that we just had?
Yeah, definitely. So I would recommend actually getting Adam Levy on this podcast as well. So he's a founder of Backed Finance, which I mentioned, which creates these mm-hmm. one-to-one backed assets, but he's also a real crypto OG, and he has a very interesting story as well. He actually was the co-founder and CTO of DAO Stack, which was one of the first DAO frameworks that had very interesting innovations as well. I think he would be a cool person to talk to for sure.
Okay. So Stefan, like, thanks a lot for coming and sharing these OG stories with us, and also, you know, shedding new light on Gnosis Chain, because I think this is like this very under the radar project, sort of, like, you know, very few people are aware that it even exists. They use POAS, but they have no idea that it's Gnosis Chain. And I think you are building very, very revolutionary, I might even say, things. So I'm really crossing my fingers, and I hope that you will succeed with getting the 0.25% to like at least 1%.
That would be amazing. Yeah, we'll definitely try. And I think we have been around for a while. We will be around for a while. And it's obviously nothing that changes from one day to another. And we are generally not fond of like just driving pure speculation, but rather building fundamentals by first principles. And I'm confident that we can succeed. But I agree with you. We have to increase visibility. So this podcast might help.
Yeah, we'll do my best to promote it as much as I can.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot, Stefan, and, you know, have a good evening, I guess, because you are in Europe as well, as far as I know.
Yes, it is. I'm based in Lisbon, yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot.
So, this is almost the end, but if you like this episode and don't want to miss the next ones, feel free to subscribe. If you liked it a lot, I'd be personally grateful if you could give us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever platform you use. Thanks to these ratings, more people can learn about Web3 Talks, and it's really important to me. That's all for today. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.